Hi, everybody. Welcome to SEND Network's ongoing Training for Trainers resource. Thanks for joining us on our journey to learn together how to make your transformational training even better. We want to encourage and empower you to keep growing in your confidence and competence as a trainer. Now, here are the hosts for today.
Hi, everybody. My name is Rick Duncan. I'm a co-host for our SEND Network Training podcast. It's ongoing training for our trainers so that you can grow in your confidence and competence as a trainer. And I have a brand new co-host today. It's Armando Barraza. Armando and his family planted the Puente Church in South Phoenix in 2008, ministering to second and third generation Hispanics. 2015, he joined NAM as a church planting catalyst in Arizona. And more recently, I'm very excited about this, he joined our training team. So he is serving the West region and Puerto Rico. So Armando, thanks for being a co-host today. Tell me, what's most exciting for you about being on the training team?
Well, I'll tell you what, one thing that I've really enjoyed is, as I've been working with church planters, and this idea of self-discovery and kind of seeing the look on their face when it kind of clicks. And I think being able to be part of that and being able to use our techniques to help guys to get to that point, that's just really, really exciting, because you can tell that the lights have turned on, that they're excited. That's kind of, you know, opening the door for them to take that next step. So that's been a really neat part of my new job here.
Yeah, I love it. Charles Campbell, our team leader, you know, he says, discussion is good, but discovery is gold. Yeah. So try to help our learners discover some things. Well, our guest today on the podcast is a friend of ours. His name is Jeff Christofferson. He's been a church planter in Toronto, and that means that he's a fruitful, field-tested, seasoned, missional practitioner of church planting. So no ivory tower stuff here. Previously, he was the executive vice president of our SEND network and really the architect of our current systems here. Right now, he's the co-executive director of the SEND Institute and the chief missiologist. I love that title. The chief missiologist.
You gotta have a lot of syllables or it doesn't count. That's right.
Yeah. So thank you, Jeff, for being on the call with us today.
My pleasure, Rick. It's an honor to be here.
Yeah. Well, we, of course, use your book, Kingdom First, in our training. So your fingerprints are all over everything that we do, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to be on the team with you. If we focus on starting a Sunday service, you're planting a church for evangelism rather than from evangelism. And so sometimes there's this tension between, you know, big box attractional model, then the more of a micro missional model. What would you say to the guy that leans toward that big box thing? How would you tailor your training to that guy? And then conversely, how would you focus your training toward the missional micro guy? Like, what are the mistakes that you see each person making?
Great question. So, you speak of generalizations, right? I'm not speaking of everybody's
right.
motivations, but when a person, you know, is looking for the big box, and he's normally looking for, okay, how do I start with a splash? Use whatever means I need. I have social media, whatever things, in order to let the world know that we're doing this thing, meeting at this place at this time. And there's a couple of things that are happening. First of all, you're counting on the fact that other people are going to leave their church to come to your church. There's going to be a percentage of that. And you're also counting on the people that do come to this to at the very least have a memory. Like, church is something that, you know, I went to and I'm not going to, and I want my kids to go, so maybe I'll go back. And so basically you're counting on the church and then the recently de-churched. That's the people that you're going to get to that kind of a campaign that brings people to a certain place at a certain time. Now, there's two problems with that. One problem is the kind of people that you're going to reach. If you can get them to your deal so easily, you're always going to fight with this problem, and people moan about this. You know, the team that I had, none of those people are here 2 years later. And you hear that over and over and over again. And that's just going to be a universal ism. But they're the people that have set your DNA and your culture. They're the people that set the values. They're the people that set the what this the church lives and prioritizes and thinks. And you're the guy that understands intuitively their fickle tastes and needs, and you're going to continue to have to kind of go chase them to keep them coming. And that's going to become a very, very burdensome problem. And then there's another issue that you have is that by and large, those people don't believe in evangelism. They if they've been in church a long time and they're like most churchgoers, they really haven't ever led anyone to Christ. And they're probably not going to do so. Even I don't care what you say and how you stand on your head. The most you're going to might get them to do is maybe on a special Sunday, Easter, invite someone to church. But that's probably about all you're going to get out of them for evangelistic activity. Further, they don't know any lost people. They don't have any deep connections with lost people. And so even if they did believe in evangelism, they don't have any, you know, most times any way to engage. So you're never going to get the John 4 phenomena where the Samaritan woman is you know, bringing the people with them to come and meet this Jesus. If you do it a little bit differently, and then there's a third problem. There's lots of problems. I can find problems. Is that when you do have a, if your core group is the, you know, the churched and the de-churched with they come with a vernacular and an understanding and biases that a totally pagan, unchurched person can't even understand. And so you're beginning to have this conversation and you're trying to dumb it down and make it sound, you know, maybe you're a missional community and you're saying, okay, everybody turn your Bibles to page 79. You're trying to make this thing so simple. And so that person who is brand new is coming there and everybody's turning to page 79. And then one person says, well, that reminds me a little bit of the high priestly prayer in John 17. Everybody says, no, yeah, yeah, yeah. And all of a sudden, this guy realized they're a kindergartner in a college class, and they don't stick at any high ratios. They're bouncing off. And unless they're really spiritually hungry or extremely extroverted, they're gone. And so by forming a church that looks and feels more like the community you're trying to reach, you have a better shot at evangelizing people in groups and sort of having that Samaritan woman kind of trajectory.
So as trainers, we need to help guys understand the problems that are going to ensue from trying to do this big box thing. We interviewed J.D. Payne a while back, and J.D. Payne was saying, you know, really, there aren't that many people out there that have the kinds of gifts in order to launch a church that feels like it's 20 years old on day one. And that's what a lot of church planters are trying to do.
Yeah, that's a good word.
We need to help guys understand the drawbacks to that approach to ministry.
And if you just want to analyze the cost to pull that off, the cost for that, you know, with Ascend Network, we have a unique privilege of being part of the most well-resourced church planting idea, I think, in the history of Christianity. Think about that. And yet, with all of our riches, we can do a little more than we're doing right now, but we can't do a lot more than we're doing right now. And if we're ever going to sort of move the needle on lostness, it's not going to be by the expensive kind of church planting that is almost unreproducible. One lightning strikes here and lightning strikes there, but it's not the normative way. Somehow there has to be an idea where a normative church is in the disciple-making process, and they're raising up teams of co-vocational church planting teams that are being deployed outside of themselves. Mm-hmm. And until church planters have that kind of a vision, you know, I think we're just going to keep this hamster wheel that we're going on. And
Jeff, as you were explaining some of those errors, I kind of had flashbacks to my first couple of years of church planting, man. So some of those hit close to home, and I can definitely relate to some of those, man. But
hey, I planted a church in Cleveland in 1986, 87, and, you know, the church growth movement, all that kind of stuff. So yes, I definitely see those problems. The conflicts between those already convinced people that you get and then these missional people that you're trying to reach. Wow, that's huge.
Yeah. And yeah. I was naive enough to be excited when all these old church people started coming to my church plan. I thought, oh, that's great. Yeah, okay. That lasted about 2 weeks. Yeah. And then I was like, yeah, could you go back to where you came from? So, but okay, so Jeff, you were the man when it came to developing our definition of a multiplying church, discovering, developing, and deploying church plant teams from within. So my question is, how did you come up with those definitions? How did you land on that? And if you could kind of unpack each of those definitions of what a multiplying church is for us.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, I wasn't the man. I was part of a team. We have a great team. So we did a study of 17 different church planting residencies of significance. And we looked at where they found their church planters. And of the 17, zero of them had a process for raising up their own church planters. All 17 of them had some kind of a combination of either backed up to a seminary or a Bible college, or they had such a great reputation that they had this magnetic appeal that people would come across the country and come and be a part of what they were doing. So they were all doing great things, but we didn't have too many examples of anything that would get past addition, church planting by addition. And so we understood that multiplication by definition means we are multiplying ourselves. And so that became the thing. We discover, develop, and deploy church planting teams. That's important from within. Our imagination was probably if this catches fire, there wouldn't be a lot of them that would be sending out solo five-tool church planters like we think of them right now when we're thinking like the five-star guy. But our imagination is more these churches would be sending teams that might look a little like that apostle, prophet, evangelist, shepherd, teacher team perhaps that would be going out co-vocationally, each having a career of their own and yet a career that's sacred to them and they're sensing a God's call to them. And at the same time, understanding that they're now giving leadership in this way. And then when you think about, you can just go from there, but all the money that's not being spent on buildings and not being spent on salary can be spent on ministry in a community and the kingdom impact that can happen right from the very beginning and the positioning that puts that people of Christ in a community. It's incredible. So that was, I think it was just really it was sobering for us to look across the 45,000 SBC churches and find just a handful of churches that could say, we have a process for developing church planners. We've planted with them, there's just a process. I mean, just a handful of them. And we realized we're never going to kind of move from where we are until we change that conversation.
Wow. So we have this definition, discover, develop, and deploy church planting teams from within. I've had a conversation with you in the past about how that differs a little bit from the book Hero Maker, a Level 5 Church. What are the distinctives there?
Well, I'm a big fan of what Exponential is doing and their Level 5, because they have really brought to the fore the need for this. And so, in fact, they've sort of brought it and made it more mainstream. The what I wouldn't say troubling to me, but I need to, for me, I just need to be able to see some progress in this idea. And the definition that they're using is for a level 5 church plant or a multiplying church is that you can pull the leader out and things will continue to go on without him. And I would agree. That's a level 5. That's a multiplying church. And the one below that's a reproducing church, which is a church that know, would plant one here and one there. For me, when you can only find one example of a level five church in all of North America, one example of a truly multiplying church in all of North America, and that is Ralph Moore, probably we need to scale that back a little bit. So we made our distinctions between a reproducing church and a multiplying church. That is, do they have a passion? Do they have a pipeline? Do they have a production? Those three indicators are how we gauge whether that's a multiplying church. A passion for multiplying themselves, and they articulate that in their normal Sunday morning services and everything that they do. Do they have a pipeline, some kind of a process for raising up those? And then do they have production? So can we look and say, yeah, they've multiplied themselves here and there. When we can find those three things, we say, okay, multiplying church.
All right. So you would say that our definition is more accessible than maybe the level five church definition.
It just becomes, yeah, for sure. To me, it's almost discouraging the other one to say, because I don't know, if only one guy's pulled it off, what are the chances I'm going to be the guy to pull it off?
Yeah, and, my name's not Ralph Moore.
Yeah, and it took him 33 years to do this.
So what are the things that a trainer should emphasize during training so that we make sure that our planters are aiming at planting and multiplying church? What should they be emphasizing on, Jeff?
Well, right from the very beginning, you're going to set your culture and DNA from your, if you do preview services, from your preview services. If you do your launch services, your beginning service, whatever you want to call it, your DNA is encoded at the very beginning. And so what I would suggest, this is how I did when I planted the church, is that when we took an offering, even though we had only lost people coming to these things, for all the preview services and for our launch series, we told them we're not keeping any of this money. All the money that's coming in, we're giving towards our first church plant coming out from with us. And so, you know, I knew that I'm like speaking Greek to them. They don't have a clue what I'm talking about, but they were understanding and starting to feel a different kind of culture than maybe they would in most churches. I think it becomes important because the gestation period between a person coming to Christ and discipling toward, you can say, I feel confident to lay hands on this person and lead them out on a church planting team, it's going to take a while. And so it becomes important if you want to keep that culture or in your church, you're going to have to, what I call, prime the pump. You're going to have to import a church planter from somewhere else, knowing this is not your plan for the long term, but you just have to keep this vision in front of your people. And so from the very beginning, you know, in year, whatever it is, year two, maybe year three, you're already bringing somebody in and you're bringing them in front of people and you're giving them some people of your team and you're tethering that church plant to your church very closely, so that there's a sense of like, man, we're a family and we're doing this together. And so in those earliest days of a church, if it's not celebrated and talked about, it's just going to be a little optional nicety to that church. It's never going to become a truly multiplying church, likely.
So what do you think about just the whole idea of planting pregnant is terminology that we've used in the past?
Yeah, I think it's great. I think that's a great way to prime the pump.
Yeah. So when we met last summer and we're talking about doing a little revamp of our curriculum, the term reproducible sustainability seemed to capture the attention of everyone in the room. And so that's important to you, I know. What does that phrase mean to you?
Well, this is the hardest part of, I think, the bring the most fear to a church planter when he's thinking about, you know, do I multiply this thing that I don't even feel like is sustainable yet? And so to come back and go, all right, what is it that we're trying to do? One of the things that becomes really important, and I find that some guys, when they drink the Kool-Aid on multiplication, they're all in. To maybe even an unhealthy degree. let me say what I mean. Anything that smacks of addition, they are repelled by, are repulsed by. And but you cannot sustain giving away if you're not adding at home. And so you cannot constantly be giving families, giving leaders, giving your best away and forget about the home base and stop adding. And so adding and multiplication are two things that have to be going on constantly. So that's one of the ideas of sustainability. You have to get over the fact that you might have to do some things that smack a little bit like what the Church Growth School taught you, but it's a way in order to have the raw material to disciple out and send out. And so that's one idea. I think it becomes really important too to lower the bar of what it is you're calling a church. And you're going to do that yourself, and it's one you plant. And if you think through, okay, I want to plant something that looks like a movement, so what does this first one that I am pastoring going to look like from the beginning? And if you build this complex, unreproducible behemoth, how do you with the seminary letters behind your name or whatever, how do you expect to raise up a leader from within to be able to reproduce that? It's not likely. And so simplify a lot of what you're doing. Go back to the drawing board. What is it that Christ asked the church to be? Make sure you hit that right on the numbers. And then let all the other stuff sort of be way in the background of the secondary and third.
You know, Jeff, one of the cool things about our job is that we get notified all the time of new cohorts starting up all over the country. And so if you could sit down with a trainer one-on-one who's just about to start his cohort of you know, 3 to 4 planters, what words of motivation, what would you say to encourage that guy who's about to, you know, spend the next 6 months helping these guys navigate their call?
Maybe the first one that's come to my mind would be the hardest thing is to get out of yourself, and because God's going to be doing a new work, a very creative work in the life of that person. And so don't project yourself onto that person in any way. Yeah. And in the same way, figure out how to tease out even the most silly stuff that's going on that he thinks is weird or not really worth mentioning, that might be the very stuff that God is doing. I would spend a long time with that church planter to understand two things. Understand the uniqueness of who he is. And going back into areas of his truly spiritual gifts. I'm not talking about spiritual gift tests. I'm talking about areas of weakness that are exercised in faith and then seeing spiritual results from. Finding what those truly spiritual gifts are and seeing how that might inform what it is. I'd spend some time really understanding the passions of that person, finding out areas that they've been wounded, finding out areas that maybe some of their background that they see stuff and feel stuff deeper than anybody else on certain areas. And maybe that's going to inform the kind of church that needs to be planted and the kind of place that needs to be planted. And then I would spend, after you really help that leader understand himself and their whole team, men and women that are serving as a part of that team, then I would spend really a time helping them really understand their community. And where are they spiritually stuck? Where is your community? And I always use three things, or emotional, intellectual, and volitional barriers. And which one of those barriers seems to be where people are hung up in your community? And being able to read that right is going to inform the kind of church that you start that is going to be effective in and so it can't be, you know, them doing the thing that you did as a leader and reproducing that, because that's not going to work. And nor can it be them. They might be enamored with some other person that they want to replicate. It's got to be a unique work that it fits who they are, it fits where they are, and it's why God assigned them. And that would be my primero uno. I'm trying to I'd be a little bit.
Yeah, how do you say that in Spanish, Armando?
And I do. That'd be my number one, I think, where I'd want to spend my most personal time with that leader. And then everything flows from that.
Yeah, yeah, that is so good. And it kind of takes us back to where we were at the very beginning. The whole idea of discussion is good. So if you're just having a discussion around a few books, around some content, but you never get to discovery. Discussion is good. Discovery is gold. You're saying help them discover their uniqueness personally and as a team, and then help them to understand the specific needs of that context. So we're back to that whole discovery thing. So we cannot be, as trainers, guys, they're just trying to get through curriculum. There has to be that personal component to that. Well, thank you so much, Armando, for being my co-host here. And thank you so much, Jeff, for your willingness to share your heart with us. And we appreciate your leadership in the past and the current leadership that you're providing for the SEND Network. So thank you very much.
Thank you, gentlemen. It's been an honor. Grateful for what you guys are doing. I really am.
Thanks for listening today. Our mission at SEND Network Training is to equip multiplying leaders with reproducible systems to plant more healthy churches. You can follow us on Twitter at SEND Network Trainers or on Facebook at SEND Network Church Planter Trainers. You can also find our podcast on iTunes. This podcast was made possible by the SEND Network of the North American Mission Board.